Fel's dusk hounds were sent down into the tunnels to outflank the sighted and strike at their backs. Fel knew there was trouble when the roof of the supply tunnel shook like that. He knew it would be so before the battle even started. The leaves don't lie. And there were many dark shapes in those he read in the hours before they deployed. The new target location blinks live on Fel's display. He checks his mission chrono and thinks back to the forge schematics. Fel remembers every detail, because that's how he was trained at the Skolem on Antar. Forgetting meant the lash, or the submersion tanks. Recall became second nature, as much as firing his rifle.
"Keep holding their stare," he says. "We will have the charges set in 5 minutes, and be up top to bleed them with you."
He saw dark shapes in the leaves, true enough. But that wasn't all he saw. There was noon sun, too. That's light. Fire. There is more than one way to read it, but Fel chooses to see it as a good omen.
"They will know fire," he says to Rain.
She used to laugh, back at the beginning, when he told her about the leaves. It's different now. It's not that she has come to believe it, but more that she understands why he does. When Rain answers this time, there's something else in her voice. Something close to a smile. "And thunder," she says. "Good hunting, Captain."
"Hold their stare," Hale says bitterly. "I want to blind them, burn them, like they burned us."
He spits again. This time there's some blood in it.
"Do you hear that?" he says.
Rain listens. And she does. It is the sighted, chanting. Some words are lost to the machine noise in the distance, but a handful stand out clear. "Make dust of the Emperor's bones." Their blasphemy hits Rain like a physical blow. Anger burns from her heart outwards, a heat that even the forge fires cannot match. She clicks the vox set live on the regiment-wide open channel. Cade sits beside her, keeping the broadcast clear, murmuring soft benedictions as he does so.
"Sons and daughters of Antar," she says. "The sighted want to make us fear, to make us doubt."
She looks at the faces of the men and women around her. Yuri Hale, his face twisted by those deep scars. Mac Arcade, plastered with blood.
"But fear is for the weak of heart. Doubt is for the weak of mind."
Neria Lai puts her fingertips to the Aquila pendant she wears around her neck. Ari Rath nods his head, his filthy, bloody fingers gripping the pole of the Antari battle standard. The icon of the crossed rifles against the wreath of thorns is a spare, bright flash of green in all that grey. It is riddled with bullet holes, but it has never looked prouder.
"We are strong of heart, strong of mind. We are children of the Emperor, the liberators of the Bale Stars, and we are not afraid. We do not doubt."
Zane watches too, her hands white-knuckled around her darkwood staff. Beyond her, hidden by the smoke and spread across the massive forge complex, the rest of the regiment will be listening. Nearly 2,000 souls, heeding Rain's words.
"We are fire, and we are thunder."
Rain's fury feels pure now. Her body aches with the want to run and fight. She draws her pistol.
"Now," she says into the live channel, "let us show them just how loud thunder can be."
In the moment between the gasp and bellow of smelting metal, Rain distinctly hears the Antari start to sing, their voices made rough by war. Andren Fel is setting his last demolition charge on the ceiling of the supply tunnel when he hears the words coming tinny through his voxlink. "Through the wilds of winter, through the even fall, brightly burning is he." There's no mistaking Soul of Antar. He has no memories longer held than the words of that song. Fel switches to his squad's encrypted internal channel.
"Do you hear that, Duskhounds?"
he says. 4 eye captains answer him. The rest of his squad are setting their own charges in other tunnels along the line, right under the sighted barricades. Cassia Till is a moment before the others, because she always is. Till is fierce and quick in all regards, including words.
Would that we were up there singing it with them, she says.
Fel smiles. He can't argue with that.
Set chronos, he says, instead. 3 minutes.
Fel sets his chrono, as 4 acknowledgement clicks come through, again with Till slightly ahead of the others. He sends 3 bursts of vox static to Hale up top to let him know the job is done. Fel can't listen to his kinfolk sing, but he still lets the words play out in his head as he goes for the ladder that will take him back to the surface. His tread is light and swift, almost silent on the tunnel floor. Through times of strife. Fel ducks underneath a pipe that's hot to the touch. The ceiling of the supply tunnel is low, and the temperature is stifling. Machine noise shakes the walls. If it wasn't for his helmet, Fel knows he'd be deafened by it. Through blood we spend. He steps over the body of one of the sighted scouts he killed on the way up. Brightly burning are we. That's when Fel notices something. He slows his pace. His Hellgun is already up, because there's no place in a war zone that you can carry at ease. He blinks the sweat from his eyes and stares into the patch of shadows that he could swear just shifted. Dark shapes. Just like he saw in the leaves.
Be wary,
he voxes to his squad.
What do you see, Captain?
Till says. And then it happens again. Just a flicker.
Shadows,
Fel says, then fires. The bolt from the Hellgun is a whisper, but it punches the shadow onto its back. As it falls, the shape crazes and flickers, then resolves. The shadow is sighted, and it's not alone. The tunnel fills with Laz fire as 2 more cloaked in the same way fire back at Fel. He catches a Laz bolt in the shoulder as he twists to minimize the damage. His carapace armor takes the worst of it.
3 targets on me,
he voxes.
Camo gear!
The shadows grow closer, their footsteps silent. He can only tell where they are by the flickering, and the way the puddles of oil in the tunnel move. Even thermal doesn't pick them up. Fel fires and misses. He takes a grazing hit to the leg in return.
I have 2,
says Till. Fel fires again and wings one of them. Blood sprays up the tunnel wall, but there's no sound.
And here, Captain,
yells Maya.
Bastards,
says Jeth. There's no answer from Roll, and his signal has disappeared from Fel's display. Fel doesn't get the chance to try the vox again, because one of the shadows comes out of the dark and knocks him back against the tunnel wall, tries to bury a hooked black knife in his gut. Fel snaps the shadow's arm at the wrist before the blow lands, then drives his elbow into its throat. The shadow staggers back, its camouflage flickering wildly. Fel fires once, dropping it with a neat headshot. 2 dead shadows. The oily puddle at his feet ripples. Fel turns just in time to block the 3rd shadow's knife with his arm. It clashes off the van brace and cuts into the soft joint at his elbow. The pain blinds him for an instant, and he loses his grip on his gun. It swings loose by the strap. Fel takes a blunt strike to the throat and another to the ribs. The shadow is hitting him where it'll hurt, and it does, but Fel is trained to take the hits and stay standing. He grabs the shadow by its flickering edges, and the camouflage dazzles and disengages. He sees it for what it is. A man bearing pointed black teeth. The sighted has blue-grey carapace armor and feathers tied into his lank brown hair. He is kitted with thermal goggles and auditory dampers. He is trying to get past Fel, to run for where he set his charges. But the sighted isn't a shadow anymore, and Fel sees him well enough to return the cut with his own knife. The combat blade goes in, to the hilt, and the last shadow falls to his knees, dribbling blood through those pointed teeth. Fel pulls the blade free, and the sighted gasps air from his throat and the hole in his chest.
Dick! Talk!
He says before falling over dead. Fel looks to the data feed built into his left van brace. It reads 36 seconds.
Hells,
Andron Fel says. He snatches that auditory damper off the sighted's body and starts to run. The last few bars of Soul of Antar echo in his head as the timer ticks down. Walk with him, know his face.
Fell's injured leg tries to buckle under him. He sees the ladder, but it's far, too far.
Give your soul away his grace, then come home, my dear.
The counter hits zero. Fell drops to the ground, hands over his head. As the tunnel grows light, the last line repeats in his mind.
Brightly burning.
Four detonations blow up through the floor of the main machine hall, spread along the sighted's defensive lines. Four fireballs that reach for the ceiling of the manufactorum in white, hot columns. The floor tremors under Rain's feet. Five, she thinks. There should have been five. There's a part of her, just for an instant, that wonders if the missing charge belonged to Fell. If he's dead. She pushes the thought aside. There's no time for it. Before she can call the charge, there's a fifth, massive explosion from the center of the sighted lines that shakes her eyes in her head and makes her stagger. It can only have been the Baneblade cannon. Scrap is hurled so far by it that it clatters off the machines and the floor around her.
That's our cue,
Hale says on the company-wide channel.
Let's go, Rifles!
Fire and thunder! Rain shouts, with her ears still ringing. And hundreds of Antari voices answer her. Fire! She runs, her heart hammering, up the central avenue. And everywhere there is steam and smoke, ash and motes of fire. Thunder! Rain's legs burn, but her heart is singing. It feels like the tide turning. She reaches the smoking mess that's left of the barricades, alongside Yuri Hale's command squad and the Harkin under Rom Odi. The dead are everywhere, some just painted as shadows by the force of the explosion. The metal flooring has been torn up, but the sighted are many, and they are not quite beaten yet. Two dozen figures marshal in the smoke, their armor glinting in the forge light. It was Laxian Homeguard armor, once. But the yellow and blue heraldry markings have been scorched off or overpainted. Every single one has marked their face. Rain fires pennants three times. Blood joins the smoke in the air, misted by the explosive rounds. Where it scatters on Rain's silver chestplate, it looks black. The Antari light the forge with las fire, moving up to what's left of the barricades and firing over and around them. Two more of the dug-in Laxians fall heavily, their guns going quiet. One of the Harkin falls in return. He screams before going quiet, just as the guns did. A stun grenade bounces off the barricades and lands among the Antari. Rain sees Yuri Hale throw it back and follow with one of his own. Only he doesn't carry stun grenades. What Hale throws is a frag grenade. When they both go off in short succession, the sighted are blinded. Then they are burned, just as Hale promised.
Push forwards!
Hale shouts. The Antari obey, taking the moment afforded to them by the explosions. But then a whirring sound cuts the air. Rain recognizes it. A heavy stubber.
Down!
Rain shouts, dropping into a slide as the large caliber rounds put dents and holes in the wreckage of the barricades around her. She hears screams from her side. Hears Hale cursing. Rain chances a look around the cover. The stubber isn't mounted. One of the sighted is holding it. She is walking braced, letting the barrel run hot as she tracks the Antari going to ground. The roar of the gun is absolutely deafening, which makes the absence of it all the more apparent when it stops suddenly. Rain looks up over the cover, in time to see Lydia Zane raise her hand to the heavy gunner. The stubber crumples and deforms from the barrel down until it detonates in the sighted's hands. The sighted screams, but that stops abruptly too, as she is also crumpled and deformed under the telekinetic pressure.
Mother of Spring,
Yuri Hale says, horrified. The sighted fall back ragged, evidently just as horrified as Hale. All of them are firing at Zane now. The air around her is a storm of las fire.
Some shots graze her, and she staggers. Others are turned aside by reactionary flickers of psychic shielding. Rain gives chase, Hale and his command squad beside her. But the sighted don't get far, because they run right into four matte black shadows with the howling faces of spectral hounds painted on their masks. Fully automatic lasfire strobes in the smoke. When the firing stops, and the sighted are dead and smoking at their feet, the lead figure bows his head in greeting. His carapace armor is peeled back to the grey, and he is masking a limp.
"Not dead yet, then," Rain says to Andron Fell.
The stormtrooper captain lifts his closed fist over his heart.
"Not yet, Commissar," he says.
Wick's heart hammers in his ears. He took another dose in the moments before the explosion, just to be sure, to tunnel his vision for the fight. The stims make everything sharp. Every sound is crystal clear and loud. Every color bright and vibrant. Everything else pushes out of his head, to somewhere it can't haunt him. Wick vaults the barricades without slowing. He can't and won't. Not because of that Aquila pendant in the pouch at his belt, or any of what came before. Guilt does no favours for the dead. He lands amongst the sighted on the other side. They are still reeling from the explosions. There is blood up the barricades from where some were caught in it, and a yawning hole in the floor, toothed and dark. Wick kneecaps one of the sighted with lasfire and kicks him into that darkness. He distinctly hears the landing, the snap and the scream. Wick is already moving to the next of them and firing a las bolt to blow out the sighted's throat. Wick takes a round to the shoulder from a third. The pain doesn't filter through, just the impact. It knocks his neck shot wide. The sighted who shot him gets within his reach. She is fast too. Fast and mad, with a deep red spiral cut into the skin of her cheek. She slams the butt of her rifle into Wick's face, re-breaking his broken nose. He sees stars and loses his grip on his rifle, so he answers her with his knife instead, punching it between her ribs. Something bursts under the blade, and blood runs down his arm.
"Blind," she is saying. "You are blind."
"Better blind than dead," Wick says.
He twists the blade, and her eyes roll back. Wick pulls the knife out and drops her. The rest of the wild folk are over the barricades now. Wick knows because he hears Chris's modified grenade launcher go off.
Thump, 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 thump.
He turns to shout for her. To ask if she's lost her damn mind using that thing with the squad so close. But then he sees what she is shooting at. And his heart goes cold with fear. It's a damned witch. A column of violet light spears up from the wild folk's position, cutting clean through the smoke. A second later, Rain feels an incredible pressure in her head. She stumbles into cover behind the barricades, her eyesight blurring. The Antari stop firing over the cover and start holding their heads and moaning. Yuri Hale slumps against the piled sandbags and scrap metal, blood running from his nose. Despite the heat in the forge, they all missed the air when they breathe. They would be dead on their feet if it weren't for the fact that the sighted are hurting the same way. The vox crackles in Rain's ear. It is Wick's voice, and he sounds terrified. Through the distorted wail of the connection, she hears him say the word she knows is coming. Witch. The pressure lifts, but the cold grip of fear remains. It is an animal response. A primal clawing at the soul. Rain recognizes it and pushes it aside, just as she does with all distractions. She sees Hale regain his feet too. It looks like an effort, but not all among the Antari are quite so capable. Dala of the Hartkin breaks formation. Her grey eyes are wide, and she's muttering those same old words. "Spare me the ways of the witch."
"Dala," Odie says. "Stay in line, damn you!"
"It'll curse us, Sludge," she says, her voice hoarse. "You know it? A thing like that?"
"Stand your ground," Rain shouts. "Turn away from this, and you forsake everything we have fought for."
Rain knows that if they break here, they will lose the Delta Gate, and the Forges too. She cannot allow that to happen.
Turn away from this, and you forsake the God Emperor's will!
It's enough to freeze most of them to the spot, but not Darla. For her, the fear has already grown too large to be pushed aside. She drops her rifle and starts to run. And there is only one response to that dangerous kind of cowardice. Rain levels penance and fires. The shot kills Darla outright. She falls, heavy and sprawling. The Antari look to Rain now, with a new kind of fear. Only this time, it's of her. It's a kind she can use.
We fight,
she says, loud and clear.
No matter the foe, no matter the weapons they use or the armor they bear. Because we fight for the Bale Stars and all of the worlds within. For every soul from here to the Sector's edge.
They know she means Antar, too. Rain has served alongside them long enough to know which words will pull at them and which won't.
For every soul,
she shouts again.
For the Bale Stars! For the Emperor!
This time, she gets an echo, as dozens of voices answer in kind. She knows they hate her in these moments. It's another animal response that, while it cannot be prevented, can be controlled. Which is exactly what Yuri Hale does when he turns to his troops and gives his next order.
They may have a witch,
he says,
but so do we.
He looks to Zane.
We get you there, and you kill it.
If Zane feels anything at being spoken of in the same breath as the traitor Psyker, she doesn't say so. Instead, she bows her head and smiles thinly.
With pleasure, Captain,
she says. Davin Wick fires his lasgun at the witch until the power cell blinks red and empty, but not a single shot goes through. When the smoke clears, the thing is still hanging there, about a meter off the ground. It is dressed like a noble, in finely made clothes the colour of the sky at low light. Rings set with jewels glitter on its thin fingers, and its feet are bare and bloody. The witch turns its head then, and Wick gets a good look at its pale face, carved with numbers and letters and wicked sigils. A red crystal sits where its left eye should be, and a too wide grin stretches its face. The witch claps its hands together, and to Wick's right, Caro Efri ceases to be. He doesn't even get time to scream, just gets swallowed up by a blue light until there's nothing but ashes. Just like Dal and Vine, gone quicker than a heartbeat passes. Nothing left to judge. Wick feels the numb shock of it, even through the way the stims are spiking. Then the witch turns, still grinning. Only now it's grinning at him. Wick's world centers, until all he can see is that grin. Until all he can hear is his heart pounding in his chest, like it wants to get out. He is truly afraid, for the first time in a long time, but he can't look away, because that makes witches stronger. He remembers the stories. Don't look away. Don't turn your back. He murmurs the words they are all taught as children. Spare me the ways of the witch. He ejects the spent cell and reloads his gun. He won't turn. Won't run. Throne. He wants to do both. The witch floats towards him, trailing smoke and shadow, still grinning.
A splintered soul, aren't you?
The voice in Wick's head sounds like wind across water. His vision goes blurry.
It is the cutting,
the voice says.
All the blood you have spilt.
Dev!
Ord is shouting for him.
Dev, move!
The shape of the witch wavers through the sights of his gun, and then the gun starts to discorporate, turning to ashes in his hands. Wick still can't move. He's frozen, like an animal caught under floodlights.
It is your peace,
it says.
The cut and the spill. You should embrace it.
The witch hangs in place, right in front of him, still grinning with those needle teeth.
I already have,
Wick says through his teeth. And he unslings Jonavir's rifle and fires. This time, the lasbolt punches into the witch's shoulder, through and through. The scream the creature makes echoes in Wick's head, as well as the forger's. It puts him on his knees, with blood running from his nose.
Stupid fool,
says the witch, in its real voice this time.
No more words. No more games.
The witch raises its hand, only to have its arm snapped, like a piece of dry kindling. First the wrist, then the elbow. The bones breaking sound like gunshots. Wick knows what's done that, and it makes him feel no better.
Oh, now,
says Lydia Zane, as she steps into Wick's peripheral vision.
This hardly seems a fair fight.
One witch traded for another.
Little pet.
The sighted psyker turns to face Zane and looks at her with his one human eye and with the gemstone eye too, though she cannot say how that is possible.
Gifts,
pulses the psyker, as if she had asked.
Not that you would know anything of gifts.
The psyker snorts with effort, and the bones in his broken arm reset. His name was Kalvar Larat once. Zane knows this because the unsanctioned blare their thoughts like warhorns. He is not one of the nine, not one chosen by the sighted to lead, though his heart longs for it. He thinks himself a star ascendant. His raw ambition makes Zane want to spit.
Look at you,
Larat pulses.
With your collar and your cables. With your watchdog at your back. Such a shame.
He sends a wave of force at Zane that she turns aside with a flicker of her kind shield.
No,
she answers.
A shame? Is you resetting that arm? Just so that I can break it again.
Zane claps her hands together, sending a pulse of telekinetic force at Larat. It puts him into the barricades with enough impact to bend the metal. Dust bursts up around her, and false wind stirs her robes. Zane does not wait, but attacks again as she walks forwards, slamming the psyker against the barricades over and over and over. For a moment, she is lost in it, in the fury of using her power. She does not feel the way her bones sing with aching, or how her skin opens in wounds from pushing her limits. She does not pay heed to the snap of wings. She will prove to the thing once known as Kalvar Larat that she is more than a pet. To the Antari, that she is a good soul who uses her power in the right. To herself, that she can take all the tests and pass them, because she is strong, and she will not break. Zane stops in front of Larat's broken form, looking down at him. He is a mess of tattered finery and blood and splintered bone. Every spare inch of his skin is scarred with words and numbers, some overwriting others.
You see my mark.
Larat pulses.
They are fate's little pet. 100 twists in time's rope. Knots and loops and nooses all. Every one of them a new truth.
Zane raises her hands to put him out of his misery, but finds herself frozen in place, pinned like an insect on a board by Larat's wicked power. He laughs, dribbling blood through his pointed teeth, then rears up, limp and broken and bleeding. His gemstone eye glitters.
And I have a truth for you too. Would you like to see it?
And he takes hold of her face with his clawed, bloody hand. Lydia Zane's eyes open to a wide blue sky. She is falling. The wind whips at her robes and rattles her crown of cables. She is not afraid, though she should be. It is a long fall. Her staff is nothing but a splintered shard in her hand. Her fingernails are broken and bloody. There are three great dark stains across the front of her robes where she has been shot. All of this Zane sees, and all of it she understands. But still, none of it makes her afraid. When the ground finally embraces her, she lands in soft loam between the boles of white-barked trees. From that terrible height, the impact still breaks every bone in her body. It is an instant of incredible pain, then a peace, like one that she has never known, as her nerve endings fail her. With her lungs punctured, Zane can't breathe. With her organs pulped, she cannot live. So Lydia Zane lies on her back in the loam as blood soaks into it, dying slowly and in absolute quiet. The last thing to go is her bionic eyes, because they are made of metal and wire, and they feel no shock at the fall. Before they fail, Zane sees four birds pass across that wide blue sky, ghosts in silent feathers.
Davin Wick can't move. He is pinned in place when the temperature drops and more blood bursts from his nose. It hits his skin and freezes. The blood is the last thing he sees before he blacks out.
Wick watches blood drip from the point of his combat knife. Regular, like a slow heartbeat. Drip, drip, drip. He breathes in and catches that iron smell, realizes that his hands are slick with it. The sleeves of his fatigues are soaked through. They stick to his skin. Drip, drip. Wick's mouth is dry, and there's an itching behind his eyes, a pressure against them. More blood. His, this time, firing in his veins, pushed by the stims, making him shake, making more blood drip off that knife. Drip. The body at his feet is in dark armour, hard plate, carapace. But it's still a body, still dead. Stabbed through the soft joints, elbows, under the ribs, throat. Armour can't protect everything. There's always a weakness. Always a place that can be cut, if you're fast and vicious. And Davin Wick knows he is both. There are markings on that armour, underneath the bloody handprints and smears, and on the other bodies he sees when he turns. All dead. Cut through the soft parts. The markings are silver. Laurels. Skulls. The knife drips again. Drip, drip, drip. Twin-headed eagles.
Rain sees the darkness roll out from Zane and the traitor witch like smoke, like fog rolling in off the ocean. Hold! She shouts to the Antari in the moment before it hits her.
Severina Rain is 6 years old and standing on a rain-lashed landing pad far above Gloam's furious ocean. Her clothes are soaked and sticking to her. They don't fit quite right, those new clothes. The dark tunic marked with the icon of the Adeptus Ministorum. The rough weave trousers and soft-soled shoes. The belt with a loop for a blunt training blade. The people that brought her here said that she'd grow into the clothes in time. That eventually, everything will fit that doesn't. But Severina misses her books. And her maps. She took nothing from her home on Darpex, because she hadn't really believed she'd never see it again, until setting foot on this platform and listening to that angry ocean. It sounds like it wants to swallow her up. Severina looks up at the hive spire, at the way it reaches up into the dark, and the clouds, lights glittering on the side of it from torches and lumens. Kilometers high, and the same again deep. It looks as though it would swallow her up too, and then she'd just be another one of those tiny lights.
It is always dark here.
Lucia's voice is raised so that Severina can hear her over the wind. Her sister is standing beside her, rain gathering in the neat dark braids of her hair. She is taller already, though she is barely 2 years older. The two of them stand close together, but they don't hold hands or link arms, because that will make the group of people approaching across the landing pad think that they are afraid, when they are not. They are cold and sad, and a little angry too, but not afraid. Never that. Lucia did take something from home, something that belonged to their mother. She has her fingers locked tight around the timepiece as she watches those people approaching across the landing pad. The brass case of the timepiece is the only warm bit of colour in the world right now, except for those tiny lights.
It stays dark because the people who made this place poisoned the sky, Lucia says, a long time ago. Why?
Lucia looks at her and smiles. It is a sad sort of smile.
Because they wanted to build a new world, she says. And poison seemed a small price to pay.
Andron Fell does his best to stay on his feet as his duskhounds fall beside him one after another. Fell doesn't want to lose them like he lost Roll, so he tries to reach for them. But then the world turns around him, and he falls too.
Andron Fell sits cross-legged on the floor of the house. The wind pulls at the timbers and whistles through the eaves. There is frost on the inside of the thick window panes. He hasn't eaten in a long time, but he can't go and hunt for something or fetch it from the trader down the way, because he has to stay and watch. Because otherwise, the duskhounds will come for his mother. It's what they do. Come for those that fate forgot to take. His mother is lying where she has been for days, pale as that frost on the windows. Andron turns the heavy blade he is holding in his hands. There are fanged faces carved into the hilt. It's too big for him to use yet, really. It was hers when she went off-world to the crusade, before she was hurt so bad she couldn't fight, so bad it should have killed her, they say. Only now, it is killing her. The old doctor from down the way said so. That they didn't do a clean job when they tried to heal her in the first place. They didn't get all of the pieces out. So now she is dying the death she should have had before. Andron knows that's how it works. He's been taught so since he was old enough to understand the stories. Fate comes for you, no matter where you go. But just this once. He thinks maybe he can stop it. If he's quick and ready when the duskhounds come. His mother shifts, just a bit.
My boy, she says. My son.
Andron gets up from the floor on numb legs and walks over, still carrying that blade.
I told you to go, she says. Why didn't you go?
He tells her all the reasons why, and she smiles, just a little. It's something she doesn't do often, because it hurts her to do it. Not on the outside, on the inside.
We all have our fates, she says. This is mine. You have yours. You will do something great. A righteous thing. I know it.
That's something else he's been taught. Something else she has always said. She read it in the leaves.
What though?
He asks her.
What will I do? Your heart will know it, she says. When the time comes.
And then there's a noise from outside the house. Andron moves to the door as it opens wide and fast. He raises his mother's knife and he goes for the shadowed shapes that enter the house. The Duskhounds come to finish Fate's job. He knocks into the first one and nicks at the shadow. It cries out, and he thinks he can do it. He can stop them and make them wait a bit longer. But then a second one grabs him and locks his arm so he can't fight them. Andrin kicks instead, until they stop him doing that too.
"Boy, cut me," says one of the shadows. "Look!"
Another of them laughs, and Andrin realizes they aren't hounds. They are men and women, though their armor makes them look like monsters. It's the same sort of armor his mother wore when she went off-world. He stops kicking.
"Let me go," he says. "I need to watch her to keep the Duskhounds away."
The man he cut bobs down and shakes his head.
"No," he says, sounding a little sorry. "No, you don't."
Andrin Fell looks back and sees that he doesn't, that they have already taken his mother, but that even so she is still smiling, just a little. He couldn't keep the hounds away, no matter how quick already he was, how much he watched.
"Fate still found her,"
he says, and the man he cut nods.
"And now it has come for you too."
Aching, bleeding, and her mind alight, Lydia Zane finally puts Calvar Larratt on his back, not to rise again. He just lies there, his throat clicking with blood, and his arms turned to ragged, splintered stumps. Zane can see the unlight of his soul twisting away to be judged. It's the same as the unlight that makes the Antari dream.
"Little bit,"
Larratt says. And now he uses his mortal voice too.
"Little monster, let out of her cage, off her tether, while her watchdog sleeps and her kinfolk dream."
He grins still, even now.
"Freedom, just for a moment,"
he says.
"That is my last truth, my last gift to you."
Zane twists her hand and silences Larratt for good by breaking his neck. The light in his human eye dims. Even the gemstone appears to go dull. The psychic storm Larratt created begins to clear, and the Antari around her stir. Zane does not move. Instead, she stands and stares at Larratt's one remaining fate mark that is clear to see, cut into his chest, just above the collarbones. It is a date and a time, just like the others. The date is today's. The time is marked down to the second. To the exact second that Calvar Larratt's soul finally twisted away. His death, writ in his skin. Foretold to the moment, just as her fall was foretold in the vision he showed her. The bird has returned, the way it always does. It perches on what is left of Larratt's face, still watching her with those black eyes. But this time, it opens its beak and speaks.
"Faw,"
croaks the bird, and Zane feels the rush of wind on her face. Her stomach turns over. She cannot get a breath.
"Mist alive."
The bird and the feeling vanishes, and Zane snaps around to see Davin Wick leaning against the barricades, holding the rifle he took from Joan of Ear. For once, there is not a trace of a smile gracing his even features. Just fear, which, like so much else, turns to anger inside Davin Wick. Zane knows that she is the source of that fear, and that Wick hates her for it. He has never made a secret of it. Not like all of those other secrets he carries. Ugly secrets.
"Is it dead?"
he asks her. Zane glances back at the mess she has made of Calvar Larratt.
"He is dead,"
she says. Wick lowers his rifle, but not completely. Always armed, that one. Always ready to fight. His hands are shaking, and his mind is like white noise, or a storm against glass, loud and roaring.
"It put lies in my head," he said. "Made me see things."
Zane thinks about what she saw, about falling into that loam, and the breaking of all her bones, the pain and the silence, the birds passing in front of the blue sky. And she knows that it was not a lie.
"A truth," she says. "That is what Larat said, yet to come, or been and gone."
Wick laughs, and it is a cruel sound.
"The truth,"
he says, flatly.
"From a witch, and a traitor one of that. No, I don't think so."
For a moment, Zane wants to break his bones the way she broke Larat's. She cannot tell if the feelings are hers or Wick's. Violence bleeds from him like ink into water. A tremor rolls from her, rattling the plasteel of the floor. Wick's eyes go wide, and he raises the rifle that he took from his dead kin. But then, something eclipses Zane's anger altogether, and she reigns in her power. It is the shadow at the heart of the forge. She had thought it to be Larat, but now she feels it anew, stronger. Zane looks past Wick, towards the Delta Gate.
"Look," she says. "Something comes."
He turns and looks, sees what she sees. The Delta Gate is opening. Rain is one of the first to gain her feet. All around her, the Antari are shaking and struggling to get up. They murmur superstitious words in their own tongue. Some are still and lifeless, killed by the shock of the dreams they were given. Despite herself, Rain finds that the dream clings to her too. The cold, the thousands of tiny lights, Lucia's voice too. It is always dark here. She shouldn't call it a dream, because that's not what it was. It was a memory, and one that she hasn't thought of in a very long time. Rain shakes her head to clear it. She pushes it aside, just like before. Far aside.
"Fate."
The voice is Andron Fell's. To everyone else, he would sound perfectly calm. But not to her. She knows him better than that. Fell is kneeling in the dust and ashes, turning his combat blade in his hand. Light catches on the carvings on the hilt. Rain asked him once if he made those markings, and he told her no.
"It was fate,"
he says, absently.
"Are you with me?" Rain asks.
Fell stirs as if waking, and looks up from the blade.
"With you?"
he says.
"Of course."
"Get the others on their feet," Rain says. "Now."
"Aye, Commissar,"
Fell says. There is a change in his bearing, as if he has found his balance. He gets up and goes to rouse the Duskhounds, and Rain goes for the others. She pulls Hale upright first. His skin is as grey as his eyes, and he is shaking with the after-effects of the Psyker's dream. He struggles to keep his balance, and Rain realizes that it isn't just Hale who is shaking. It is the floor under their feet, too. She looks up and over the last remaining barricades to see the two halves of the Delta Gate sliding slowly apart beyond the smoke.
"Why in terror's name would they open the bloody thing?"
Yulia Chris says, leaning on the barricades.
"After all they've done to keep us from it."
Zane comes up through the smoke. The Psyker is in such a state that Rain is surprised she can stand. Her grey robes are tattered, and her furs are matted with blood and filth. There are deep shadows around Zane's false eyes. Her veins show dark through her paper-thin skin. Wick is a pace behind Zane, watching her warily. He is shaking too, but it is nothing to do with either Psyker's work. That kind of shake is the sign of a stim user. Wick thinks that Rain doesn't know, that he can escape her judgment. He doesn't realize that he is only running ahead of it, like the tide. That when he becomes more of an issue than an asset, he will be overtaken by it and made to answer for his weaknesses.
"Something comes,"
Zane says. Her teeth are pink with blood.
"Another witch?"
Hale asks her. Zane sniffs wetly.
"Something comes,"
she slurs again.
What's wrong with her?
Hale says to Wick. Wick spits on the ground, still watching the Psyker.
Damned if I know, he says. She started saying it when the gate began to open, and now she won't stop.
Cress's eyes have gone wide. She starts pulling at the pouches on the bandolier across her chest to reload her grenade launcher.
Zane's right, she says. Something's coming! Something with a bloody great engine!
Rain can't understand how the Antari can pick it out from the sound of the gate grinding open and the forge machinery, especially half-deaf. But if there's one thing Cress knows, it's things built to kill.
What is it?
She shouts up to Fel.
What do you see?
Something bad,
Fel shouts back. He drops down off the high portion of the remaining barricades.
Something they have made.
Rain looks over the barricades. She sees it now, too. Not a tank. Not a war machine or a cybernetica robot. It is an abomination. The sighted have fused parts of a super-heavy tank onto a set of jointed mechanical legs. Exhaust stacks stick up from the back of it, like spears in a sea monster's back, spewing thick, dark smoke. It is metal and crystal, and thick clots of oil where the two materials meet. Its hooked limbs punch holes in the plasteel of the floor as it approaches them. She wonders if this is what the sighted with the gemstone eye meant. If this thing is the life they have made here.
Throne of Terror, what have they done?
Cress looks distraught.
Those guns mounted on it. Those are Vulcan megabolters. On your feet,
Rain shouts, moving among her soldiers.
Now!
Hale is beside her, shouting for grenades and for the missile teams, for the Antari to fall back firing. He orders them to aim for the vision slits and the joins of the limbs and to try to halt it. But then Rain loses the sound of Hale's voice. She loses every other noise in the forge, because the Vulcan megabolters begin to fire. Rain sees Cress firing her grenade launcher. She can't hear it over the racket of the megabolters. She just sees the barrel of it lighting. Flash, flash, flash. The grenades land in front of the abomination and against it, but when the smoke clears, there's barely a dent in the armor.
Keep firing!
Rain shouts over the vox, and she can hardly hear her own voice.
Collapse the floor! Make a grave for it!
They are losing their ground, losing their lives. Next to her, Joel of the Harkin is hit. He vanishes, and blood spray mists across Rain's face. The guns track. More of the Harkin are torn away. Craters are punched into the barricades. Fel is throwing demo charges for the abomination to find as it chases them. Rounds tear up the floor. Missiles trace overhead from the Antari heavy weapons teams. There's an arc of plasma fire from Aelish, last of the Pyrehawks. Then there are no Pyrehawks at all, because she's gone too. Vaporized. Rain knows the likelihood of breaking anything on that thing with a bolt pistol from this range, but she fires anyway, because she won't die without fighting it. And in that moment, a part of her is certain that that is what is about to happen. That she'll die here, turned to a mist of blood, like Joel and Aelish, and all of the others that are simply gone now. The abomination puts one of its metal claws over the barricades and onto Fel's charges. They go off, splintering the limb and unsteadying it. But the abomination doesn't stop. It makes a sound that is all too much like a scream and pushes through. It is right on top of them. Then Lydia Zane steps up beside Rain and throws out her hand. For a handful of heartbeats, the abomination's guns spin down. Its legs freeze and twitch. Zane is locking them, holding it still. In the ear-ringing absence of the sound of it firing, Rain can hear Zane screaming. Her back arches, and lightning runs up and down her thin limbs. In the moment of respite, while the abomination is without its teeth, the Antari fire on it. Their last missiles, last grenades and demo charges, las rounds and flamer fuel and solid shot from snipers. Rain fires her pistol too, until it clicks empty. The abomination is engulfed in flame, and Rain's heart leaps. She hears Wick laughing, though she can't see him for the smoke. But then Zane collapses, and the smoke clears, and the abomination's guns begin to whine and spin again. The barrels are red-hot spirals, like the markings cut into the faces of the sighted. Rain takes a breath, blinks. Light fills the forges, blinding and white. She thinks this must be it. Death. But the light doesn't come for her. It spears into the abomination instead. A beam, fired from behind the Antari. A second shot follows it, cutting deep into the thing's armor and rocking it on its clawed legs. The abomination staggers backwards and ratchets its guns upwards in answer, only to be struck again. Rain chances a look back, and her heart sings. Behind them, through the smoke and the ashes and misted blood, stride two Imperial knights. The massive bipedal war machines are halved in violet and white, armed with glowing thermal cannons and hung with pennants that ripple in the hot air of the forge. They blare the sound of victory horns from their vox emitters. Between them rolls a command tank, trimmed in red and gold, a roaring lion sculpted on the forward-facing armor. It bristles with guns and trails devotionals. Hundreds of foot soldiers follow behind, silhouetted by the smoke. The Lions of Bale. Rain knows them, as she knows the man she can see in the cupola on top of the command tank, lit in gold by the forge light, his fist raised in the air in defiance. The hero of the Bale Stars Crusade, living avatar of the Emperor's will.
Serek, she shouts into the vox, the Lord General Militant!
And every one of the Antari answers by shouting his name, as more furious spears of light arc towards the sighted's ailing machine creation.
Serek!
The machine reels, staggers backwards. Serek! The ammo hoppers for the Vulcan megabolters rupture. Then so does the abomination's reactor.
Serek!
There is a scream, and a flare of white light, as the abomination collapses. Rain is knocked to the ground, winded and bruised, and momentarily made blind and deaf by the explosion. But she is smiling, too. Chapter 3. The Lord General Militant. Davin Wick ejects the last power cell from the rifle he took from Jonavere and uses the gun like a club instead to put the sighted down with a blow to the face. Killing him takes 3 strikes, and it is noisy and messy.
They are running,
Ord says from beside him.
Routed!
Ord has been out of flamer fuel ever since the machine that tried to kill the lot of them succumbed to the barrage from the knights. He's using a knife in his fists now, because they are the only weapons left to him as they push up through the halls behind the lion's tide, sweeping up what remains of the sighted.
Damn right they are routed, Wick says.
He goes to take a drink from his canteen and finds it empty. It's the stims that do that, dehydrate him, make his brain feel as though it's pulling away from the insides of his skull, especially on the comedown, which is hitting him like that rifle stock hit the sighted's face. It's been worse lately, and he knows it's because he's been upping the dose. He also knows he hasn't got a choice. Less will do nothing, and what's an extra bit of pain on top of the rest?
Why do you think they do that?
Cress asks. The combat engineer nudges at one of the bodies with the toe of her boot. The sighted has cut up his face, like they always do. But Wick knows that it's not that she means. It's the eye. Or more precisely, the jagged red stone in its place. He thinks about that witch, the one who put a nightmare in his head.
Because they are mad, Wick says. Corrupted. Faithless. Pick a reason. They're all true.
Cress nods her head, but she drops into a crouch to look closer.
If you're not careful, he'll go the same way, Wick says, looking too far into that stone.
He's right,
Ord says with a soft laugh, though Wick didn't mean it as a joke.
You know the stories.
It's not that,
Chris says.
It's this.
She pulls the sighted's las rifle free, snapping the strap at the fastening. She turns the rifle in her hands.
A rifle, Wick says, flatly. There are plenty like it.
Look at the mark on it, she says, and throws it for him to catch. Wick does as she says. It is stamped with a Departamento marking, like all standard-issue las rifles. The serial code reads STE-125-50021. It just looks like a normal serial code. He frowns, and it makes the headache growing behind his eyes even worse.
Like I said, there are plenty like it. Well over 12 million of them. What's your point?
Chris puffs out her cheeks and takes the rifle back from him.
This rifle was manufactured on Steadfast, she says. And it isn't standard issue.
She ejects the power cell and weighs it in her hand.
It has a larger capacity cell, and they count and balance the rifle, so you don't feel the difference. They are good guns.
Wick holds out his hand, and Chris puts the cell back in and passes the rifle to him. He tests the weight of it, and realizes she's right. It is a good gun.
Thing is, Chris says, they've only been manufacturing that type of rifle on Steadfast for the past 2 years.
Wick's headache is rooting properly now. The light is dim in the forge, but it still hurts his eyes.
So?
He says, impatient.
So how did the sighted get them?
Chris says.
Steadfast has been under Imperial control for over 10 years. It's the best protected world in the sector.
Wick looks at the rifle in his hands. There's a silver Aquila on the stock that the sighted has tried to remove with the point of a knife. He can't help thinking of what the witch showed him. The thing Zane called a truth. The 5 dead, marked with their silver eagles. The blood dripping from the point of his knife. He shakes his head to clear it.
I don't know, he says. Killed for them, I'd bet. Took them off the dead.
Chris frowns, her tattooed arms folded across her broad chest.
You're probably right, Sarge, she says, but I'm taking it to the Commissar.
Wick shrugs.
If there's one thing I know, he says, it's killing, and the why of it.
Don't we all?
Ord says, laughing again, loud this time. Chris joins in as she takes the rifle back and slings it across her shoulders. Wick doesn't laugh, though. He didn't mean that as a joke either. Andron Fell approaches Lydia Zane slowly. It reminds him of his training on Antar, when they sent him out against the wild wolves with nothing but the blade that his mother had left to him. They dropped him in the middle of the Black Forest, where the roots are a tangle and the canopy is so thick it is dark always. Only here and now, the tangle of roots is a tangle of the dead. The canopy is the vaulted ceiling, and the smoke makes the darkness. The wild wolf, sitting perfectly still, is Lydia Zane. She is on her knees at the foot of the sighted's abominate machine. It has fallen onto its back, punched with holes by the Imperial Knights, then finished by one of their roaring chain blades. Fell can see the cut, curving up and over the repurposed tank chassis. Inside the thing is dark, and something darker dribbles out onto the plasteel floor. The puddle spreads slowly towards Zane.
The spiral,
she is saying, softly. Fell keeps his gun raised. She is so still and covered in wire.